Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Going to work can be deadly. Earlier this week, Canadians took a moment of silence to remember people who had died or were injured on the job. It is called the Day of Mourning. What makes this year's commemoration more significant is the number of workers who have died or become sick from COVID-19. As these deaths appear to most of us as figures in daily reports, the stories behind them are chilling. While most of us associate outbreaks with seniors' homes and long-term care, the majority are actually happening in the workplace. As of this week, educational workers, that is, teachers and others who work at schools, represent the largest number of outbreaks in Ontario. There have been 282 outbreaks at schools. As yet, nobody has firm numbers about how many actual workers have become sick or died due to the pandemic. Today's show focuses on those people. First, there is an interview with Noreen Rizvi, the regional representative for Unifor, one of the largest unions in Canada. She is responsible for Northumberland County. We will talk to her about the Day of Mourning and the challenges all workers are facing. I'm so pleased to have with me today Noreen Rizvi, the Ontario Regional Director for Unifor. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you very much for having me.
I want to start out with something very basic and ask you, what is the National Day of Mourning?
So the National Day of Mourning, for us, all workers, I think it's a day to remember and really honor the lives of those who are no longer with us, who went to work but did not come home, or who got injured on the job. And it's not just about remembrance, but it's about remembering and then coming together with a collective action on how we prevent any further death or injury. And the idea really is that a worker should go to work safely and come home every single evening safely.
Now, in the past, we've acknowledged the loss of workers due to injury or death, but this year seems a bit different in the context of the pandemic. How has the pandemic drawn into focus the significance of the health and safety of workers?
I think, you know what, this has been absolutely an unprecedented time. We've had to come together as a community, employers, government, really all stars and stripes of what keeps our economy going, to figure out how do we make sure that that we continue to go to work and come back safely. And it's been very unprecedented because of the way that this virus is transmitted. Mostly when we look at health and safety, occupational health and safety laws in terms of injury and fatality preventment, it's very different than airborne viruses, something that we haven't been used to. We've had epidemics, we have not actually had a pandemic. And so, this was the first time where we had to come together as a union and really work at the speed of light, trying to figure out what would an infectious disease pandemic plan look like so that we could work with our health and safety reps, train them and get them out as fast as they can into the workplaces, because we have a lot of essential workers. We have a lot of workers who, and thank God for them, they are our COVID heroes, have kept us going. But when they go to work, what are the kind of things that they need to stay safe and come home safe? And it's not as easy as making sure that, there's nothing lying around to prevent trips and falls. That's not the way it goes in this. There's some very different tools that we needed to give to our health and safety reps. We needed employers to understand their responsibility in putting together a pandemic plan, in putting together an infectious disease plan, in ensuring that workers knew their rights, and that they were able to exercise their rights. and that, you know, that they worked with with workers, so the workers' voices were at the table. That is generally the best way to move forward anyways, and it works really well in a unionized environment, but it was critical this time that we did that.
Can you share a story, maybe one or two examples of the kinds of things that your members have had to do and some of the steps that they've had to take to ensure their safety in the pandemic at work?
Yeah. So, you know, in many of our workplaces, we have come together to, you know, look at the workplace and see where the exposures are, where are the hazards, when, you know, to really go through the time and motion of you walk through the door, who's around, how close are they, what are the hazards, who do you come in contact with, all of the people you come in contact with, and how do we prevent some of those hazards, remove some of those hazards, and where they can't be, how do we make sure that, you know, those hazards are then, you know, worked around in a safe manner. We've had to do that in auto plants. In our gaming industry, which still hasn't been open, you know, they've put in an incredible amount of health and safety features, whereas, you know, you're at a table, now you have plexiglass all around you. You know, you're actually signing out a slot machine for a certain period of time. Those are very different things that we've never really had to contemplate in you know, the idea of health and safety. The very first place that we had, you know, obviously our healthcare sector and retail. In retail, it was how do we make sure retail workers are safe? And right away, we talked to employers almost the first week, last March, a year ago. Within the first week, we had conversations about how do we, you know, stop the flow of an incredible amount of people walking in? How do we make sure that there's, you know, some sort of a barrier between the person working at the cash and customers? What about people touching food and all of those things? Nothing that we've ever had to do before. But it was like the question to ask was, how does this disease and virus transmitted? And if so, how do we prevent it while we're still continuing to work?
We've seen stories reported in the news media around some of the horror stories that some of the working conditions that some people have had to work in during this pandemic. What have you done to stem those tides and to respond to those kinds of news articles where we've seen such egregious breaches?
Yeah, you know, I think the most powerful thing that turns people's hearts and minds, makes policymakers listen, make employers take notice, are personal narratives. And I'll share a story that, you know, to me was, it was startling. It was, you know, it was shocking, but it was actually devastating because they were essential workers. Our healthcare workers, our personal support workers, very early on in the long-term care facilities. And now we saw, you know, COVID burn through our long-term care sector. And it was absolutely devastating. And it was, there was a huge feeling of helplessness. There was a period of time where there wasn't enough PPEs because the government had actually, you know, we weren't manufacturing our own. We didn't have a Ontario made, you know, made in Ontario sort of a strategy. We didn't have PPEs, and our members actually had to find ways to protect themselves in the very beginning, where employers didn't think it was that they had to supply PPEs. So there were these pictures when our members called in to say, you know, we have no gowns and we have no masks and we're going in and it's an inferno because there's 80 residents in this long-term care facility that have COVID. They had to wear garbage bags. And they put these garbage bags on themselves and they worked in those garbage bags for like 14 to 18 hour days. Well, they took those pictures. And you know what? That's a personal, powerful narrative. And community cannot get behind that that is an okay way to work, that that is okay for our seniors to be living under those conditions, and that those workers who have to work with our seniors and take care of our most vulnerable should have to wear garbage bags. And so those pictures were entirely powerful. And sometimes it's not about writing a big, long, you know, op-ed or launching a massive campaign. Sometimes it's that very powerful image where you're seeing a personal support worker still going in to take care of the residents, still doing their job. And now they're dressed in garbage bags because their employer does not believe that they have to supply them with PPEs and the government does not have a stockpile. So that was very early on. And, you know, I think some of those, what we found from those images was that the narrative that was most powerful in this pandemic to bring about change was the workers' voice, their stories, not anybody else's, but exactly their lived experience. And that is what we've continued to do in Unifor.
That was a year ago. What's the situation like today for those people?
In long-term care, I think, you know, things have gotten slightly better. But now, you know, and I say that with a lot of caution because it was a different COVID variant back then. And today it's a very deadly variant, very different. The transmission is different. So I think the fear is still there. And you also have to remember these workers have been working for a year. And the first 8 to 9 months were under horrible conditions where there was no PPEs, where they had to work extra long hours, where staff that had COVID were not replaced. And so they're exhausted already from a year. You're not looking at at staff that are currently in there that are, you know, feeling somewhat in control. They have gone through absolute exhaustion. Everybody knows that there is not enough personal support workers to be working in those facilities. Those are still the conditions out there. Just because they have a mask and just because they have gloves and just because they have a gown doesn't mean that it's changed their working conditions.
Do you have any idea the number of workers who have died or become sick on the job over the past year due to the virus?
In our union, in Ontario, we've had over 1,400 members who have tested positive for COVID. We have lost 5 lives as a result of COVID. The majority of those, the transmission has been in healthcare, almost close to 800 of them. And then, of course, there's retail and manufacturing, anywhere where it's sort of a congregate facility. That's where we've seen transmission, obviously.
And that's out of how many total members?
We have 160,000 members in Ontario.
What is the pandemic teaching us about working conditions in Canada?
Wow, it's teaching us a lot around working conditions. It's teaching us a lot around what's missing in social nets in our society. I think, you know, one of the things that is clearest that we always said, but it wasn't always clear to others, was the fact that, you know, you needed, better wages, paid sick days. People should not be coming into work sick at a time where I suppose back when, if the government was to look at it, would think, well, it's just a normal, you know, sort of everyday flu. Today, that flu is deadly. And I think that, you know, some of those measures that are just really very easy to implement would have changed if had we already had that, would have changed the trajectory of Ontario today. Making minimum wage and having to work through this pandemic, putting yourself in harm's way, not having any pay when you need to stay home if you're sick, having to weigh the odds of should I stay home and lose a few days of pay, or should I get to work because I won't be able to pay my bill? Those are the kind of things that no worker in Ontario, in Canada, should have to think about. And that's been highly problematic. I think the other thing that this pandemic has really taught us is how inequitable our workplaces are, in the sense that who are truly essential? And what do they look like? What's the demographic of those people, right? The people that are staying home and are able to stay home and make really good salaries or are able to be paid when they're off sick, those are not the people that we relied on through this pandemic to stock our shelves and to take care of us. But the people that we rely on the most, the essential workers, you know, those are the ones that are contracting the disease. And when you look at their demographic, there are your people of color. There are your, you know, racialized workers. They're the ones that are, that have no choice but to live in a multi-generational home that has, you know, two and three generations of people in condo buildings that are, you know, that you couldn't even possibly socially distance if you tried. And so the inequities are all showing up through this pandemic.
You've said a number of important points. I'd like to go back and maybe tease out a few of those. There is a major effort right now to get the provincial government to give workers paid sick days. Can you tell us about why this is such a big issue right now?
Well, first and foremost, the Premier's own science table has said one of the six pathways out of this pandemic is paid sick days. In Peel, there was a very important study that was done by the Peel Public Health Unit, and they surveyed over 8,000 people. 2,000 people admittedly went to work with symptoms, and 80 of them went to work confirmed with COVID. But you have to think about, why is that? If they were paid the exact same amount of money that they would have had they gone to work, if they were paid the exact same amount of money to stay home, they would have stayed home, right? And so paid sick days is highly important. And I think it's has been incorrectly viewed by employers as time off. It's actually to stop transmission of illness to others. And it is actually a public health safety measure. And it's actually the responsible thing to do. And quite honestly, the cost of business. You don't want to have somebody come in and you know, infect the rest of your staff and your customers. I think there's a responsibility that is on employers that has been shirked for a very long time. And we have been huge advocates of paid sick days. When the pandemic first started last March, I wrote to the Premier and called on the need for paid sick days immediately. So that if you're sick, you're not sitting there and thinking, should I, you know, I'm not feeling good. Should I go? Should I not? No, you should stay home. It's the responsible thing to do. If we force people to go to work because they're essential, then we should give them the choice to stay home when they're sick.
Now, some people may be listening to this and say, but people abuse that, you know, they're not sick, but they take a paid sick day. How would you respond to those people?
Listen, in everything in life, there's always going to be your one-off, right? And that's not how you you put together responsible public policy. You don't look at the one or two bad apples. That's not how you do it. And today, I would be hard-pressed to hear those same people say that. Today, when you're seeing transmissions of 4,000, 5,000, when you're hearing ICU doctors, critical care doctors, you know, talking about the fact that they have no beds left, that they're having to think about triaging certain people. When you see pictures of the Brampton Hospital with a tent outside ER, that's where you're going to be standing and waiting before you can come in. I don't think anybody could argue that anymore today, because, you know, the fact is that it is too dangerous. Today, it is way too dangerous. This pandemic has taught us this lesson that should not be unlearned. We should not turn around and say, okay, the pandemic is over and let's make sure that the abusers don't get this. That's not the way it should go. Because the people that need it the most, we have just seen the racialized workers, the marginalized workers, the people of color, the essential workers, the young people that are going in to grocery stores, people stocking our warehouses. We should have a responsibility to think that all of those people are there in good faith. They want to earn a decent, honest living. They're helping us get through every single day, and we owe them something. Not the one or two bad apples are going to take it away from everybody else.
We watch as some employers have provided temporary bonuses to those who are essential workers, and then they've taken them away, and in some cases recently been reinstated. What does this tell us about fair pay?
Oh boy, this fair pay, this has got to be one of my biggest beefs, to be honest with you, especially in retail, where, what you're saying is the Canadian Tire and Loblaws news releases that just came out that they, you know, their executives received significant bonuses because of the amount of money that they've made through the pandemic. Because people were, you know, e-commerce has gone up. Retail, people are buying, you know, groceries, stocking up on all kinds of things. They have made money. Some types of sectors have really taken a beating and others have done exponentially well, but they have not thought about sharing that with their employees. The retail sector, I was extremely disappointed when they first gave the what they called a hero pay. Some places they call it a pandemic pay. It was a $2 increase to hourly wage. And then they took it away, all of them at the same time. And there was some conversations where they had, you know, been pulled in by the government to see whether this was collusion or not. Because how is it that it all came in at the same time and it was all gone at the same time? And the, you know, their position was that things are better. I mean, we're in our third wave of the pandemic. We are seeing more employees and workers that are getting COVID on the job. Every single day in retail, we're seeing this. And yet they haven't, you know, there's only been one out there right now that has come out and said, look, we're going to do this. We're going to do this because it's the right thing to do. And the others have thought, no, we're going to give the money to our executives. Not the frontline workers who have gone in and put themselves in harm's ways, but I bet those executives are all working from home, safe, but they get the bonuses. You see this in the retirement home sector as well. They received massive bonuses for a job well done. Well, what happened to our retirement homes, our nursing homes, and our long-term care sectors? I don't know. Like, did everyone suddenly have amnesia? Ask the people who lost their loved ones. They'll remind you.
The impact of the pandemic on women has been very noticeable. What has the union done to support women who have faced a lot of the brunt of the pandemic? And what do you see taking place in regards to the women you represent?
Yeah, God, this the pandemic has been, you know, even if you look at unemployment levels and who has lost more, who, you know, women are more underemployed than men. And in terms of, you know, even safety, if we watch through what happened with the pandemic, when you put stay-at-home orders and lockdowns, that can sometimes be very dangerous. That's not a safe place for some women to be. And we were really, because we do a lot of advocacy work on, you know, domestic violence, safety of women, gender balance, gender pay, pay equity, all of those things, childcare. We made sure through the pandemic that there were two things. One, that everything had an equity lens, and two, that everything had a gender lens. So in terms of recommendations to premiers and to the prime minister's office and to and public policy and a public facing campaign, while we had the campaign, we made sure what are the gender pieces in this that need to be recognized and put forward, and how does this affect and impact the most marginalized person, so that we made sure that those two things did not fall off the tracks. Because it's true, women were hurt significantly more in terms of loss of employment. We also know that retail was the only growth in terms of jobs. And so if there was anything, that's where they were going to go. And that they were significantly and disproportionately overrepresented in jobs where they were essential, had no choice to go into work, and were in harm's way. And so in healthcare, for example, in retail, for example, that's where we have the most amount of women working. A lot of them are single parents. They had trouble accessing childcare at a time where there was lockdown. There was all kinds of things that set women back. But importantly so, we paid really close attention to what was happening overseas in terms of the numbers of domestic violence and intimate partner violence numbers going up. And really quickly, we made sure that our women's advocate programs were in place, that we had on our website resources for women to turn to. We made this a broad conversation, a constant conversation that people, women knew that they could come to their union for help. Because, you know, I was really concerned about the fact that for some people to stay home is safe. And for others, especially if they have a partner who like may have been laid off. And now, you know, this, it's not a pleasant situation at home, what, how that could impact them.
Is there any reason to believe anything will change out of the pandemic?
I think the government will change after out of the pandemic in Ontario, quite honestly, especially after this last weekend. And but I do. I think generally and genuinely that people have a better understanding of what so many have advocated for. Why paid sick days are important, you know, why having a government that's progressive is important, why certain policy is required. I think that there's going to be a lot of changes that are going to come out of there. I think people are going to expect more from themselves. I think they're more aware now of themselves and others and their working conditions. And people today care more about somebody else than they probably did pre-pandemic. And as soon as you get to that point, you will have that many more people that will stand beside you when it's your fight, because it becomes their fight. Today, for all of those people who have been lucky enough to stay home, to not have contracted COVID, I think they have taken it on as their own fight for those who are forced to go to work, who have contracted COVID, who have lost their lives to COVID and to those family members. I think that it's mobilized this province, like we will we'll see a lot later. And the folks that were always the advocates out there, the loudest voices that were standing at Queen's Park, you're going to see a different demographic of people out there today after the pandemic.
Noreen Rizvi, thank you so much for talking to me today.
It's my pleasure, Robert. Thank you so much.
That was my interview with Noreen Rizvi, the Ontario Regional Director for Unifor. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.